Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Before we begin tonight's show, I'd like to invite you on our latest adventure. Hercules and the Space Gods is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through our podcast on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in Tim Beckley's paranormal anthologies, a variety of live and now Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space God supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. Today, I'm very proud to bring you Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots with Mary Jo Fahey. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Thank you very much, Hercules. I'm very well and certainly excited about tonight's program. Mary Jo has done it again. I'll wait till you hear the subject matter we've got for you tonight.
I got a sneak peek at that through the documents that Mary Jo so kindly sent. So I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi, Hercules. How are you?
Okay, I will be sitting here in rapt attention. Just holler if you need me. Onwards with the show.
Okay, all right. Well, the program is indeed Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots. I'm Nick Curto, your co-host, along with...
I'm Mary Jo Fahey, your other co-host. Together, Nick and I founded Disclosure Network New York, DNNY, is a grassroots organization now moving into our 20th year of providing two meetings a month throughout the year in Manhattan.
We focus on cutting-edge UFO, ET issues, paranormal phenomena, major health issues, as well as many related and very important subjects that are in back of the mainstream news headlines. In other words, who or what is pulling the strings behind that curtain?
Our members do intense investigative deep research into these various topics and share that information with the group at our meetings twice a month, our internet followers on our website at www.dnny.info, as well as on YouTube. Both carry our recorded DNNY programs. It's a great way to catch up if you've missed one of our meetings.
Our motto right from day one is, quote, connecting the dots to seek truth, unquote. We have available to our DNNY members worldwide the DNNY News Blast, and that's a daily email service focusing on the cutting-edge important topics of special interest to our members. If you'd like to join our group and become a member, you may email me, and I'd be glad to provide you on return mail with all the details. I'll give you now my email address, which is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat that, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. In addition to our latest news stories to our members, you'll also receive detailed announcements of our what the meetings are going to be about, which are now twice a month on Zoom. And we also have special events year-round, including informal get-togethers, an occasional picnic in Central Park, if the weather's good, and other special events. Again, our website address, I'm going to give it to you one more time, is www.dnny.info. That's dnny.info. Okay, so that's it, and let's get right to it. Mary Jo, I'm really looking forward to tonight's subject, so please tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Thank you, Nick. Tonight's topic is bioprinting, which is the first in a three-part series of podcasts about nanotechnology. Bioprinting is a form of 3D printing using live cells, and the technology is merging with nanotechnology. The related topics that will be covered in our May and June podcasts include ancient nanotechnology, which is May 15th, 2021. In a show we did January 30th with Hercules, we covered a cup, a glass cup that was discovered, thought to be belonging to the ancient Romans, and actually created in Alexandria, Egypt. It's called the Lycurgus cup, and that had nanomaterial inside. Silver and gold nanoparticles were discovered, and that's on display in the British Museum. But next month, we'll also find that nanomaterial has been discovered in medieval stained glass, including the South Rose Window at Notre Dame Cathedral, and also in a sword that was used during the Crusades. So we'll look at what various authors have to say about those things, those discoveries. And then in June, the topic is nanomedicine. And most of that show is going to be covering nanovaccines, including the COVID-19 vaccine, which is has nanotechnology that's built into it. Nanoparticles are a thread that can be traced back to our March 2020 podcast, which was part one of our show on artificial intelligence. In that show, we talked about the Platonic solids that Plato mentioned in 350 BC. The solids include the tetrahedron that exists in nature, the cube that exists in nature, the octahedron that exists in nature, the dodecahedron that does not exist in nature, and the icosahedron that does not exist in nature. Nanoparticles can be dodecahedron or icosahedron. The Platonic solids are mentioned in New Age books. They're called sacred geometry, but they're never explained. I worked as a freelance technical writer in New York in 2001, and the summer before the events of 9/11 was very quiet, and I read about 50 or 60 New Age books. Later, I learned about the fullerene, which is a very strong dodecahedron nanoparticle that is made of carbon. A dodecahedron is one of those last two Platonic solids that does not exist in nature. I've talked about how carbon is in all organic life, and this fullerene seemed very strange to me. I also learned that sand is made of silicon dioxide, which is a combination of silicon and oxygen in the shape of a tetrahedron, which is the first Platonic solid. It was helpful to find an example of something in nature, which was this tetrahedron. Now, I've been looking at Platonic solids for 20 years, and it was not until I looked at them for this program that I realized that they hold the key to our existence. The first three exist in nature. Then there is a big fork in the road. Plato must have known this. The last two are artificial, and they're based on geometry. Over and over again in our discussions at the end of our shows, we talk about how we've been duped. What's hard is an understanding that artificial life has existed for a very long time. It's accelerating now, which is why I wanted to do a series on nanotechnology. Now, one of the things that I learned recently while looking at the Platonic solids are the surprises that turn up in Google searches when you add the artificial solids, dodecahedron and icosahedron. In our two-part podcast on artificial intelligence, I mentioned that while I was organizing material for part two, I was also writing a story for a friend who moved to Janesville, Wisconsin. I was adding dodecahedron to all of my Google searches back then. And I was also adding the word torus, toroid and toroidal, because I noticed the word toroid in a scientific paper written by J. Craig Venter, whose team created an artificial cell on a computer in La Jolla, California in 2010. Two big surprises turned up when I typed Wisconsin dodecahedron and Wisconsin torus into Google. I learned that several large dodecahedral diamonds were found in Wisconsin in 1893. When you type the words diamond and dodecahedral into Google, several links describing diamonds as dodecahedral are returned. There are pages that describe them as natural, but they do not exist in nature. When you type, when did Cecil Rhodes form De Beers diamonds, Google returns the year 1888. Now, when I typed Wisconsin and the word torus, Google returned links to the University of Wisconsin's plasma fusion reactor called the Madison Symmetric Torus, or MST. It was during those searches that I stumbled on a Google book written by a quantum physicist named Stephen Blaha describing space as dodecahedral. I read the paragraph from his book that describes dodecahedral space in part two of the podcast on artificial intelligence. The paragraph and the title of his book is in the show notes. Further searches on Madison's symmetric torus mentioned Princeton's Plasma Physics Laboratory, or PPPL, that's used for nanosynthesis. A lot of extra details about my searches are in the Janesville story that I've included as a PDF file with the show notes. The characters in my story discuss nanotechnology quite a bit. For example, one of the characters remembers that in Star Trek Voyager, actress Jeri Ryan's character has nanites in her body and that she was rescued from a race known as the Borg. The Borg are part organic and part artificial, with technology that is far beyond Star Trek's Federation. The nanites are in actress Jeri Ryan's body because she was assimilated. The character in my story types, is a nanite similar to a nanoparticle? Into Google, something that I did in real life, and a link to Wikipedia's nanorobotics page is returned. The page says that the terms are synonymous. It says, a nanoparticle is a nanorobot, and the terms nanobot, nanoid, nanite, nanomachine, or nanomite are synonymous, not just on Star Trek Voyager, but in real life. I'd like to mention that our extra show that we did with Hercules on January 30th, 2021, during that show I mentioned that Google's cloud management platform is called Kubernetes. It used to be called Borg. To read about Google's Borg, you can Google Borg, the predecessor to Kubernetes, published on the Kubernetes site, April 23rd, 2015. I searched for an explanation for the name change, but could not find anything. But we know, if we watch Star Trek, that the Borg assimilate people. I also want to mention that at a 2014 TED conference, futurist Ray Kurzweil said that by 2030, nanobots will connect our brains to the cloud. Back to tonight's topic, which is bioprinting and nanotechnology. Let's talk about some definitions. The Oxford Dictionary defines 3D printing as the action or process of making a physical object from a three-dimensional digital model, typically by laying down many thin layers of a material in succession. 3D printing of live tissue is called tissue engineering. Because the process involves cells, the technology is merging with nanotechnology. According to Merriam-Webster, nanotechnology is the manipulation of materials on an atomic or molecular scale, especially to build microscopic devices such as robots. It involves placing atoms as though they are bricks to give complete control over the structure of matter. Nick, at the end of the January podcast, you mentioned 3D printed homes for the homeless. I found a related article written by writer Sharon Jason, originally published in the Washington Post in March 2020 and republished in the Kaiser Health News on March 9, 2020. The project, created by a construction technology company called Icon, uses a 3D printer called the Vulcan 2. At the time Sharon wrote her article, 6 homes were underway, and there is a plan for 500. Listeners can Google 3D printed houses for the homeless, Kaiser Health News, to read more detail. A company called Local Motors, a Phoenix-based company, has developed a way to create drivable cars through the use of 3D printers. The world's first 3D printed car was debuted at Chicago's International Manufacturing Technology Show. The car is called a Strati that first took 140 hours to print, but after refining the manufacturing techniques, it took 45 hours. There is a company in New York and Boston called the Ministry of Supply that is using 3D printing to create clothing. For example, they make an Alexa-powered smart jacket that costs $495 using nanotechnology. With Alexa technology embedded, you can tell your jacket you need to be warmer or cooler. When I typed 3D printing human body, NIH, into Google, I found several scientific articles in the National Library of Medicine database about organs that are 3D printed. The process is called bioprinting. One of the most compelling articles about bioprinting was published in September 2016 in the American Chemical Society's journal called ACS Central Science. The article is titled "The Path to Printed Body Parts," written by a writer named Prakhi Patel. Even though the article is slightly dated, it contains a large amount of useful information. Ms. Patel explains that 3D printing debuted in the 1980s and is used to make everything from toys to wind turbines. She says a bioengineer named Thomas Boland pioneered bioprinting in 2000 at the University of Texas, El Paso. He used a Hewlett-Packard inkjet printer to print bio-ink made of living bovine cells suspended in a cell culture medium. To read Prakhi Patel's article, Google "The Path to Printed Body Parts, NIH." Nick, a large percentage of our listeners are probably science fiction fans. That same group may also be familiar with 3D printing as well as nanotechnology. For those who are hearing about 3D printing for the first time, I've added a film and an episode of Star Trek Voyager to the show notes that they could watch to understand what it is that we're talking about. I've also included some photographs. The film I've described is in the show notes is The Fifth Element. There's also a movie poster on the cover of the show notes. Actress Mila Jovovich plays a character named Lilu, who appears to be bioprinted.
Mary Jo, I just want to interject here, if I may, that I'm always knocked out with the advanced scientific data that ends up being in our better science fiction movies. It always knocks me out to see that amount of research into the scripts to make it as real as possible, and probably putting forth new ideas about science for the mass audience who enjoys science fiction movies. I just want to interject that.
And the writers probably draw from real life.
You bet.
Now, the word nanobot is also used in the 2004 remake of a 1975 film called The Stepford Wives, based on Ira Levin's 1972 novel. The original film, directed by Brian Forbes, was a serious horror film, but the remake, directed by Frank Oz, was adapted as a dark comedy. In both films, the women in the town of Stepford, Connecticut, are transformed into robots. In the remake, Matthew Broderick, who plays Walter Cresby, sneaks into what is called a transformation room in the men's club and destroys nanobots in the women's brains at a computer console, waking them up from their robotic state. Now, articles about bioprinting are selling it as a technology that can be used to make transplanted organs at costs that are much less than donated organs. For example, I found an article titled "The Science Fiction World of 3D Printed Organs" by Donovan Alexander, published December 19, 2020. Donovan says, according to the National Foundation for Transplants, a standard kidney transplant on average costs upwards of $300,000, whereas a 3D bioprinter, the printer used to create 3D printed organs, can cost as little as $10,000, and costs are expected to drop further as the technology evolves over the coming years. Another article that was published in September 2017 in the Journal of Medical Ethics says 3D bioprinting of body parts would avoid the yuck factor of growing organs in host animals. Our December 2020 podcast was about human-animal chimera research. And according to a November 2019 article published in Science Immunology, the pig has been widely agreed upon as the optimal source animal for human transplantation, in large part due to its physiologic similarities to humans. Dr. Megan Sykes and Dr. David Sachs, who wrote the article, say most tissues and organs of swine bear a remarkable resemblance to those of humans, both in structure and physiology. This includes the heart and circulatory system, the kidney, the pancreas, the liver, the lungs, and even the skin, which is almost indistinguishable histologically from the skin of humans. To read the article, Google "Transplanting Organs from Pigs to Humans, NIH." In August 2005, writer Brian Thomas Fitzgerald wrote an article for the Greenpeace News titled "Monsanto Files Patent for a New Invention, the Pig." A Greenpeace researcher named Christoph Thenn, who monitors patent applications, discovered that Monsanto had filed for a pig patent covering 160 countries. Writer Brian Fitzgerald suggested that Monsanto wants to dictate what consumers will eat, but it appears that Monsanto may have understood that the pig is a source for growing transplanted organs. Brian's article is no longer on the Greenpeace site, but has been republished on a site called Grain. To read the complete article, Google the title. I wondered if there are hospitals in the world where patients can have an organ bioprinted. When I Googled hospitals bioprinted organs, I found a Popular Mechanics article published on November 28, 2016, written by a writer named Avery Thompson, titled "Hospital Will Open First Dedicated 3D Bioprinting Facility." The facility is located at the Queensland University of Technology in Brisbane, Australia, and it opened in 2017. 3D bioprinting has arrived. I found a January 6, 2021 list of the top 20 3D bioprinting startups, along with photographs. A few of the startups list their funding. I've added the list to the show notes. One of the most disturbing characteristics of nanoparticles, which, as I mentioned, are used in bioprinting, is their ability to control cell behavior. As long ago as the 1920s, a Swiss physiologist named Walter Rudolf Hess learned how to induce biological responses in cats by stimulating brain cells. Responses included the fall of blood pressure, slowing of respiration, as well as hunger, thirst, urination, and defecation. Hess also found that he could stimulate brain cells to produce extreme excitement and defense-like behavior. He also learned to induce sleep. In addition to his work with cats, Hess ran the International Foundation for the High Alpine Research Station in the Swiss Alps called the Sphinx, located on the Jungfrau Summit. The summit is 11,716 feet above sea level, and it is one of the highest observatories in the world. He served as its director until 1937. Nanoparticles in the body are usually cleared by white blood cells that engulf foreign material, but researchers have learned to coat them with protein so they are hidden from the body's immune system. To read about stealth nanoparticles that control cell behavior, Google stealth nanoparticles evade neural immune cells, NIH. The article, written by a team led by Dr. Stuart I. Jenkins, was published in the Journal of Controlled Release on February 28, 2016. In part two of the April 2020 podcast on artificial intelligence, I mentioned that 51 nanomedicines have been approved by the FDA and 1,500 patents have been filed. The COVID-19 vaccine is a nanovaccine. In the April 2020 podcast, I explain how I discovered a scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine named Adele Talat, who led a team focused on developing a poultry vaccine to protect chickens from the coronavirus. Adele's team then went on to develop a human coronavirus nano vaccine. Listeners may have seen a television ad for a meningitis vaccine. When I Google, "Are all new vaccines nano vaccines NIH?" links describing nanovaccines and immunization are returned. An article published in the December 2009 edition of the Journal of Biosciences is titled "Nanovaccines, Recent Developments in Vaccination." The Freestyle Libre Continuous Glucose Monitoring System and the Dexcom G6 Continuous Glucose Monitoring System are both based on nanotechnology. The products are promoted as easier to use than finger sticks, but the ads never mention nanotechnology. Google Continuous Glucose Monitoring, Nanotechnology, and you will find articles that explain how the products work. We will be covering more about nanomedicines in the June podcast. In part two of the April 2020 podcast on artificial intelligence, I mentioned the 26th International Conference on DNA Computing and Molecular Programming that took place at the University of Oxford, September 13th through the 18th, 2020. The 27th International Conference on DNA Computing and Molecular Programming will also be at Oxford, September 12th through the 17th. When I Google artificial intelligence, DNA, nanotechnology, NIH. One of the links returned is a 2013 paper titled DNA Nanotechnology, A Future Perspective. The authors say, in addition to its genetic function, DNA is one of the most distinct and smart self-assembling nanomaterials. Nick, you and I have often talked about my suspicions that there are advanced alien races here on Earth who blend in. And I think discussions at the DNA Computing Conference at Oxford are way beyond bioprinting. In 2010, I read the first edition of a book called Oracle of the Illuminati by author William Henry, published in 2006. In the first chapter, he describes a National Science Foundation white paper titled Converging Technologies for Improving Human Performance, Nanotechnology, Biotechnology, Information Technology, and Cognitive Science. A white paper is an in-depth report or guide about a topic. The term originated with government, but the expression is now also used in technical fields and business. William Henry was very excited about the white paper, and I searched for it on the web, and I found a PDF copy. It was published in Arlington, Virginia in June 2002. The document is 482 pages. On the numbered pages, there is a startling section on page 169 titled, Download Yourself into New Hardware. I believe new hardware refers to a 3D printed body. A list of benefits includes no death, space-friendly hardware, and hive mind. The document's title is so long, I refer to it as the NBIC for short. In part one and part two of our podcast on artificial intelligence, I mentioned Nick Bostrom, who is a philosopher at Oxford. Bostrom is the author of a book called Superintelligence, and he has warned that AI may bring an end to humanity. Bostrom describes our situation as children playing with a bomb. His book is compelling because he covers topics such as AI motivation. He explains that an AI life form can be devious, extremely clever, and can quietly take control. He's coined the term singleton for an AI takeover. Around the time that I read Nick Bostrom's book, I also found a paper titled Taxonomy of Pathways to Dangerous Artificial Intelligence, published in 2016 and available on the web as a PDF file. The paper was written by Roman V. Yampolsky, who is professor of computer engineering and computer science at the Speed School of Engineering, University of Louisville. Yampolsky says the creation of a malevolent intelligence system can occur by taking an unvetted human and uploading their brain into a computer to serve as a base for future AI. To read Roman Yampolsky's entire paper, Google Taxonomy of Pathways to Dangerous Artificial Intelligence, PDF. So, Nick, the rest of the show notes are just the details about the film, The Fifth Element, and also that Star Trek Voyager episode that's titled Life Signs. So that's as much as I have on
Well, Mary Jo, that's a lot. Oh, my goodness. I honestly think, Mary Jo, that this is one of the most important programs we've done to date, and we've done quite a bit. But the ramifications of this technology, as I'm sure you'll agree, is profound.
It is, and it's also, I find it rather scary.
I agree with you there. And one of my dearest friends is about to have a major operation on Monday. We're all saying prayers for him. And he's going to have his kidney removed. removed. Wow. And I'm thinking, when you were saying that part of your research, I was thinking of him and the traumatic times he's going to have, not only facing the surgery, having the surgery, and then recovering, which will be at least 5 days in the hospital. And in the future, if there was a way to print organs that were fully functional, what an amazing achievement that would be. And as you're saying, we are on that track right now.
Well, here's the thing, though, Nick. Actually, as icky as it sounds, the safer route as far as steering away from nanotechnology would be to get an organ that is grown inside of an animal, because the bioprinting version is going to have nanotechnology embedded. Because nanotechnology is now part of, it's not part of all 3D printing, but it is part of bioprinting. And
right,
nanoparticles although it does sound like a great, breakthrough, the nanotechnology part of it is the part that's the most, brings up the most concern, because they're tiny little robots that can self-replicate and they control cells. So that's the part about
right.
it that is, unfortunately, puts it in a bad spot.
No, that's a very, very deep concern, as you're saying. Absolutely true. Also, when we're talking about nanoparticles, in the last year, with the vaccines being injected into a huge amount of humanity worldwide, I've been hearing more and more about nanoparticles and the vaccines that carry nanoparticles. What is your feelings on that fact? Is that something to be very concerned about? Do we have enough research to assure us that that's okay or not?
We don't. And in the June podcast that's coming up, I have found articles written by scientists who are very concerned about the toxic effect that nanoparticles can have on the body, particles that can be inhaled, ingested, injected through or even absorbed through the skin. The food industry is putting them in our food. They're putting them in personal care products like creams and all kinds of our products, and they're not telling us. There's a toothpaste company called Toms of Maine that was so worried that their customers were going to think that nanoparticles had been added to their toothpaste, that they actually made a formal announcement and said there are no nanoparticles in our toothpaste. Because
wow,
they,
really?
Yeah, there are. So these things are being used, and they're not telling us about it. And meanwhile, there are these scientists who are concerned because they're so tiny they can cross the blood-brain barrier and become embedded in our brain. And that, of course, causes all kinds of problems and all kinds of problems. I mean, the scientists who write papers about the toxicity are very blunt about what can happen to your whole nervous system with these nanoparticles inside your body. And here they're using them, to monitor blood glucose in these Freestyle Libre and Dexcom systems, and they never mention it. So they're... We have, I think we're being bombarded. The other thing that's a mystery that I'm going to bring up in June is, and this ties into that Princeton, fusion reactor that Princeton has. I found
oh, yeah.
a whole paper on their website that talks about what has occurred there for the last 10 years. And nanosynthesis appears to require a fusion reactor, which is, fusion occurs at millions of degrees temperature. And I looked, I searched and looked and tried to find. Now, Princeton's plasma fusion reactor, they say, will be capable of producing nanomaterial for commercial purposes, like all kinds of things, like the kinds of things that I've been mentioning. But they're not geared up now, it seems, and there's some fusion reactors in Europe and other places around the world, but the mystery about these nanovaccines, one of the biggest mysteries that needs to be investigated is where exactly are they manufacturing them? Because they are nanovaccines. I mean, you can find that mentioned in just regular news articles about, like, Pfizer's, for example. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine is a nanovaccine. So that means it has nanoparticles in it. But Pfizer didn't make the vaccine themselves. They had to partner with a German company. But it should, you know, if they require a plasma fusion reactor to create the nanoparticle portion, where exactly, I wonder, are they being manufactured? So, you know, there's all kinds of unanswered questions about these vaccines.
No, that's a very, very good point. And I would also say, Mary Jo, that who is overseeing all of this? Is there any agency worldwide or in America that's overseeing this very much cutting-edge technology?
Well, it's amazing to me that the FDA has already approved so many nanomedicines, and also that these companies have lined up to, you know, and are filing 1,500 new patent applications. So apparently,
that's huge.
And the FDA apparently doesn't have any, and not only that, but this whole nanomedicine segment or sector seems to be, it's being positioned as much more advanced than pharmaceuticals. So if the major drug companies like Pfizer doesn't make them themselves, and they have to partner with a German company, and then there's these small startups, when you look at the list of startups of the companies that are involved in this technology, you don't see the big pharmaceutical names. So these are, you know, I don't know. It's turning in an entirely new direction, and it's happening very fast.
Do you think that the larger names are not there because of legal reasons, ramifications of lawsuits?
This happened in the early days of the internet, of the web. For example, the big ad agencies on Madison Avenue were not prepared for the, you know, web development. All of a sudden, in New York and other parts of the country, well, California and New York, there were these small startups, these small web developers who knew how to build websites. And the large, huge, gigantic ad agencies didn't know how to do that. So it could be something similar. The very, very large pharmaceutical companies don't have their own divisions that can produce nanomedicine. Instead, what Pfizer did is they went out and partnered with a German company. Now, I don't know whether they all have to do that or whether they can. It turned out the big, in terms of the web, the big gigantic ad agencies on Madison Avenue, they didn't really adopt web technology. It had to be turned over to these smaller companies. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's a legal issue so much as it is, you know, some companies have the advanced technology and others don't. So that's probably what's happening.
Yeah,
you know, that
makes sense.
The ones who are very, very advanced are not going to share the technology with other, you know,
you
other
bet.
Firms.
Right. Yeah. You know, also, on a side note, I've seen very complicated pastries that were served in the finest restaurants right now that are produced by 3D printing. Have you seen
really?
Any pictures of those? Yeah. Have you seen any pictures of those?
I have seen elaborate foods made with bioprinting. Now, whether there is some bioprinting, or not, pardon me, not bioprinting, but bioprinting involves live cells, but 3D printing,
right.
there is some 3D printing that does not involve nanotechnology.
Right, right.
But it is apparently 3D printing is growing and growing and growing. It's quite
3D
amazing.
3D printing is the future. It's the future of architecture. It's the future of individual homes. It's the future of different products that eventually you will be able to print in your own home. And there's been a lot of research on that. It's incredible what could be out there. Also, I read that in space, when there's a something needed, there'd be a printer to print it right there in the station, the space station or the planet that you're on, so that you would have access to that very quickly. And that's also part of the plan of the very near future. So this is huge on so many, as you're saying, on so many different levels, that it's really mind-boggling how fast this is growing.
The problem with that is the our culture has so many classics, like, you know, it's based on all kinds of, and Academy Awards are given to costume designers, and there's classic parts of our culture that might just be harmed because they just are not, there's no place for them in this new technological area. Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, with that company that makes clothing with 3D printing, there's no preservation of classic styles, or, you know, there's no designer that goes along with that whose talents they create these amazing, both, you know, for people and for film, you know, costume design. All of those specialized fields and professionals might be harmed by technology. Once again, you know, there's a possibility that aspects of our culture might disappear because of things like, you know, 3D printing.
Right. Also, on the other part of that, I've actually seen costumes from science fiction movies that were printed using plastics. Yes, for masks and for body parts of aliens and things like that. That you think, how in the world it's so technically advanced, so complicated designs, and how in the world could they do that? Well, they could craft that by 3D printing. So some of the smart designers are actually going the other route and using this technology as part of their new design. So that's incredibly interesting also, that this is going on.
For certain types of necessary projects, it's remarkable. But there's I think there's an area though where if it may make, you know, what we do have already, or what is presently being used for you know, clothing and other manufacturing, it might harm you know, what does exist. This is it's a silly example to bring up maybe, but the Star Trek has the it just escaped my mind. They have a principle of not harming less developed culture.
Oh yes, right.
The Prime Directive.
The Prime Directive. Yes, the Prime Directive. We have nothing like that, but yet we have these very, very advanced, you know, examples of technology that might just harm what already exists on our planet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, I got to put a sidebar in. Look at history and how many times we have gone into other cultures and totally changed it for our own advantages in some cases,
yes.
Or
yes.
Bringing new concepts of religion, both good and bad, and interrupting cultures that have already existed. And there's a lot of examples of that in not only Europe, but of course even in America with the American Indians and all that. It goes on and on. So that's so interesting that other beings from other planets may indeed have a system of not interrupting a culture that's in development. And certainly we would be considered that when here we are on our own planet doing just that. You know,
yes.
It's so ironic, you know, in some levels. When you really look closely and see what's going on, my goodness. Let me go ahead with the last few minutes and just say that if anybody in the audience has any questions or comments for Mary Jo or myself, we'd be delighted to get your input. I'm going to give you my email address, and you could email both Mary Jo and myself at that address. If it's for Mary Jo, I'll be happy to pass it on to her. So if you get out a piece of paper and a pen, I'm going to give you that right now. My email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, at gmail.com. So it's nicknyny1@gmail.com. Okay, I just wanted to make sure we got that in. Well, Mary Jo, one more thing on my mind is that there's so much research of the birds that you've put together. How would our listeners access that? Could you give them a way to do that?
Oh, they'd have to look to the news blast to maybe get that link on the internet where there is a folder of the show notes, because the whole reason I put the show notes available to our listeners as, you know, up on the internet as PDF files is because of the dates and the titles of these articles and the names of the journals or even keywords that they can type into Google themselves if they want to read the source material that I've organized for these podcasts. You know, we skim the surface.
It's a gold mine of research.
Well, they may want to read this. And I did index. We're coming up on in the June, which will be the nanomedicine. That will be,
right.
I think, that'll be like a year and a half's worth of podcast information.
Oh, podcast.
And
it
got so large that I created an index. If there's just for my
yes.
For myself, I needed it because I would be thinking, oh, which podcast did Nick and I talk about, you know, this or that? And so there is also in the folder an index that continues to grow.
It's a wealth of information. So, Mary Jo, again, what would they type into their computer to access that now?
They're going to have to – the link is quite long. I don't have it here in front of me.
Oh, okay. Then what we'll do is –
if you could put it out
to
the news blast, it would be great. Just to maybe
– do that. And also, Hercules, could you
– I'm here.
Hercules, could you also, if you would put it on our announcements for the our Connecting the Dots as a continuing a continuing piece of information every time we do an announcement about the program for that particular month, if you could put that, how to access that, I think that would be a real service to our listeners.
I would love to. However, you can't load PDFs. In the groups, they used to have a category called files where you could do it, but all of the
right.
new groups don't have the file category. So you'd have to go to one, like a really old group, and put it in there. So I could look to see if I have any unused groups and repurpose it.
Just publish the link to the folder that I've put up there, and that would be some place that they can go to get the PDF.
Okay, that I can do.
That's great. That's a good way to do it.
It's called a high drive, and I just rent it. Teachers use it. It's a folder that, you know, that has all the PDF files.
I will visit it tomorrow, and if I can get a link, I will add it to the description and the links for today's show.
Oh, great. That would be wonderful.
Excellent. Excellent. Hercules, how much more time do we have? I know it's getting close.
We have 6 minutes total. They're going to start interrupting in like 4.5 minutes.
Okay, so just a couple of minutes. Mary Jo, any final – this is quite a subject. I mean, it's a very, very exciting. I think it's one of the most important subjects we have ever covered, and believe me, that's an understatement. Do you have any final quick thoughts on this particular subject for the listeners?
I just wanted to say that one of the big surprises that I had on this whole series that we're doing on nanotechnology is the fact that the Notre Dame Cathedral rose window, and the it's called the South Rose Window, has nanomaterial in it. That just
wow.
Sort of, I was blown away by that. And also there's a sword, it's called the Damascus Saber, that has nanotubes that they discovered. It makes it so strong, it's so sharp. It, the whole sword, it was used during the Crusades. And it's so sharp that if a silk scarf is thrown in the air, it'll slice the scarf right in half. That's how sharp it is.
Wow.
And it's just, I mean, that throws our whole our history all, you know, lopsided. It turns us all, I mean, nanomaterial in Notre Dame stained glass and a sword that was used during the Crusades.
That popped out at me also. When the moment you said that, I went, holy cow, what don't we know? Which is
yeah, there's
a lot.
So much. There's a lot. Yeah.
We're just catching up. All right, so we're going to go then to our closing then. What a wonderful show. Mary Jo, you did it again.
Thank you,
so much. And so let's go to the closing then. So here we go. This is Nick Curto.
And Mary Jo Fahey for Connecting the Dots, wishing you all an enlightening journey.
As you connect the dots to seek truth.
Till next time, keep informed, stay healthy and safe.
And be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye for now.
Take care.
Thank you both again. You're awesome. And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you tuned in live by your computer, whether you called in, or whether you'll be joining us later on when the program goes on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin.
This is the